It's time for the Drive's Top 5 at 5.
All right, here we go. Hour number 3 of the Drive underway. 5 o'clock here on Fan Run Radio. Russell Bear and Trey all hanging out with you. Tennessee basketball coach Rick Barnes set to join us here in about 5 minutes, right after we get through with the Top 5 at 5. It's brought to you by our friends at Citizens National Bank. Check them out online at cnbtn.com. Number 1. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee ordering everyone to stay at home unless they absolutely have to. Executive Order 23 signed today. An announcement said he wants to take more steps to ensure residents stay in place and help prevent the potential spread of the coronavirus. New numbers show the state's death count from virus complications is now 32, and there are over 2,800 positive cases. That's up from 24 deaths and 2,600 cases the previous day. Number 2, college basketball news today. Michigan State basketball coach Tom Izzo and two assistants contacted a witness in a 2017 investigation of criminal sexual conduct involving a basketball player before the witness had discussed the incident with police or school investigators. Obviously, Bear, we've seen this kind of stuff before, man. Never a good sign when you've got the coaches getting involved in what should be a police investigation.
No, not at all. Like, I think given any other time, this would probably be the top story, you know, regardless of sports. Yeah. Sounds like they got a lot of explaining to do, if you ask me.
Number 3, NFL news. Titans running back Derrick Henry signing his $10.2 million franchise tender. The team announces today the two sides still committed to working on a long-term deal before the July 15th deadline for franchised players to sign extensions. And we'll see if King Henry gets re-signed. Trey, what do you think? Will the Titans get a deal worked out with Derrick Henry before July 15th, or could this possibly turn into a another Le'Veon Bell holdout type situation?
I would wonder, does he want to sign long-term right now? They franchise him. Would he want to go ball out this year and then potentially be able to make more money? Does that make sense? I mean,
No, you want to sign. He's playing running back in the National Football League. I mean, he doesn't know what carry could be his last. He wants that $100 million contract now.
No, I agree. I agree with that, but I'm wondering if the Titans are actually going to pay that type of money. You know what I mean? Like, that's the interesting part of it.
That is the question. Number 4, Tampa Bay Buccaneers have found their backup for Tom Brady. It is a familiar name. Blaine Gabbert is headed back to Florida. The number 10 overall pick in the 2011 draft of the Jaguars, getting another shot. The Buccaneers signing. I guess when you spend $30 million for 1 year, Tom Brady, you don't have a lot left over for the backup, Bear.
No, you don't. So he'll be, I mean, they're screwed if Brady goes down. But then again, you know, I mean, they had to have somebody because Brady is, what, 42 now? He's one hit away from being done, period.
Not getting any younger. And number 5, the Cowboys, speaking of names from that you might have forgotten about, they're giving Aldon Smith a chance to resurrect his playing career, signing the talented but troubled defensive end to a 1-year deal. Sources tell ESPN the deal worth up to $4 million. Aldon Smith is 30 years old now. He has not played in a game since he was suspended in 2015 because of legal and substance abuse issues. He is in the process of seeking reinstatement to the NFL. Posted some photos on Instagram late last night, signing a contract with the Cowboys. So we'll see if Aldon Smith can walk the straight and narrow. Would be a nice way to finish up that story. All right, that is the Top 5 at 5, brought to you by our friends at Citizens National Bank. Visit cnbtn.com for details or call 453-9031. Special guest now joining us on the show. He is the head basketball coach at the University of Tennessee, Rick Barnes, jumping on the show with us this afternoon. Coach Russell Smith, Trey Wallace, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I hope you guys are.
Hey, we're doing all right. Thanks for jumping on with us. Hope all is as well as it can be with you and your team. And just sort of along those lines, I know you can't get into specifics of your players with the HIPAA laws and everything, but just, you know, where are you and your program at in terms of making sure everybody from the players, the assistants, your entire staff stays healthy?
Well, we're doing just that. What we have done, you know, once everybody got home and got settled and everybody is with their families right now, we do stay in really pretty much constant contact with them, not just in general things too, but we want them, and I do know they understand the seriousness of this and what and where we are right now as a country. And but we do talk to them about things that they're going to have to go back and do in terms of, you know, because, one, they love the game of basketball, obviously. They all have made it clear that they wish they could be here, and which is a good thing. I think anytime your team, after a break, they want to get back and get going again. But we just we sent them a little package of things, you know, weight vests, and make sure they have balls in the shoes because, you know, when they left, they weren't sure exactly what was going to happen. And then we just, again, just encouraged them and talked to them about the things that once we recapped the season with them and went through last year and talked about moving forward, what things that they felt like they needed to work on, then obviously what we feel like they need to work on. And you'd be surprised how many of them were right on time or right on cue with us in terms of seeing the way we saw things, which is always a good thing. But it's just staying in constant contact with them and let them know that this is very, very serious and it's something that we have to take very, very serious.
Coach Trey Wallace here, and I appreciate you joining us today. And I wanted to go back to that Wednesday night in Nashville. You know, I was there. I'd just gotten into town from Knoxville and covering the other, you know, the four teams that were playing that night, and it just felt kind of weird. It was, you know, one of the biggest Wednesday night crowds I've ever seen at the SEC tournament, but, you know, there was just this talk around everybody that, you know, things could really get a little crazy here in the next 12 hours. And, you know, I think once everybody got back to their rooms and they saw what was going on with the NBA and, you know, how things are going from that standpoint, I honestly didn't know if I would be coming to the Bridgestone Arena the next morning. But, you know, can you walk me through that night for you? What was that like, you know, trying to follow everything? And then, you know, you head from the hotel over to Bridgestone the next morning and, you know, it was such a weird feeling, and I'd like to know kind of how that went for you and what kind of conversations you were having with other coaches and the commissioner the night before.
Well, you know, we obviously on the way over there, we had stopped in Cookeville and spent time with some of the victims and some of the families who had lost loved ones through the tornado. And as we rolled into Nashville, you know, we went about, you know, what we had would normally do playing, but with all the news and everything surrounding it. And then, to be quite honest, I got a call the night before talking to a person that said that, you know, there's a 50-50 chance that we might not play. And this was after those, you know, other games that you had witnessed. And I felt at that point in time, there was no way we're going to play because that was, you know, really the day that the NBA decided they were going to close it down and shut it down. And in my mind, I'm thinking there is no way if the NBA doesn't play that anybody else can play, because we already get beaten up a lot about, you know, we don't do enough for student athletes, we're using them too much, and here are guys that are getting paid to play say they're not going to play, here we're going to make amateurs play that haven't even had a say in terms of what their feelings are right now. But when I got the call that night, you know, 50-50, I'm thinking the next morning, there's no way we're going to wake up and they're going to say the tournament's been called off. But then when we walked into the building that morning, there was no doubt in my mind, and I'd said it to Marty Smith, we shouldn't be doing this, because there was, I think you used the word weird, surreal, whatever word you want to put on it. It just didn't seem right at all. And Nate Oates just said that he wasn't sure. And he interviewed right before me, and I went on, and I said, I'm sure we shouldn't be playing, because I could tell the players had started asking questions that it really the night before. They're like, Coach, are we going to be okay, or this and that. And, you know, if we would have played, you know, guys would have played, coaches would have coached, but it just shouldn't have happened, because there was a there was something there that I just felt strongly about. And I think whether it's fear or whatever, like, we don't know what we're dealing with here. And when we drove up to the stadium, what was ironic, you saw them breaking down everything around the tournament. You know, all the things that go on around Brookstone Arena downtown, they were breaking all that down. And it just was a very, you know, like you said, weird type feeling. And so I do one interview with Marty Smith, walk over, and I'm talking to Bob Kessling, and halfway through that conversation, I get a call from Reed Sigmund that said, the tournament's been canceled, don't tell anybody. I said, well, I'm doing an interview right now, and literally within a minute, it was out there. And so then that's when Marty came back up to me a second time as we went in, and I talked to the team and told him what it was. I said, we're safe, but here's what we're going to do. We're going to get back. We're going to get on the bus, and we're going to be on the road in the next hour and 15 minutes or so. And that's exactly what we did. Then we got back, and we met with our medical staff and let them talk. And then we made sure that everyone knew that this is what we wanted to see them do, and get home and take care of themselves and make sure they got with their families. Because at that point in time, my whole thought was, I'd like to be able to be with my family right now. And I think that's where everybody should have been. And I think we realize, I'm not sure back then if we realized just how serious it is, but I think now we all know this is real, and it's very real.
Tennessee basketball coach Rick Barnes joining us on the show this afternoon. And coach, I mean, it's, you know, just almost a fitting way to end the season weirdly like that, because it was a weird season for your team. With you start the season with Lamonte's injury and the way his season ended. Josiah, I know you were depending on him. He started out banged up and never really got healthy, it seemed. And then you have the two additions in the midseason. Have you been coaching for a while now? Have you ever been a part of a season like that?
In all honesty, we haven't. I mean, when you think about it, and you hit it, and then we started over, it seemed like, so many different times. I mean, the way we had worked all summer, all spring to get to where we, playing through our guards. And then that wasn't going to take place with Lamonte's injury, Josiah being hurt for, a big part leading up into the season. Then Jordan Bowden struggled. And then, we had to do an about face where we're slowly starting to figure out, okay, we're going to have to play through Folky and Eve Pons, and then all at once, Lamonte decides to shut it down. And then we had Santiago, who we knew that was coming, but we had no idea what kind of impact he would have. And when he came in, and to be quite honest with you, that was one of the, I've never seen a story like that develop, what he was able to do without any practice, basically. And so we went through a 2.5-3 week period. I was talking to a person today. The day that Lamonte told everybody that he wasn't going to play anymore, that Wisconsin game, I don't know if we could have beaten anybody in the country. There was like, what else can go wrong here? But the other things that we'd been fighting up to that point. But when I stop and look back, and I don't know if I fully have done that yet, I really admire these guys for fighting through it with us, because it seemed like every day there was something. It was something going on. But they stayed positive, and they made the adjustments. New guys, different guys, Folky and Eve had to learn new roles in terms of, now they're being asked to do a lot more than they thought at the beginning of the year. And then Santi comes in, and he has no clue. And to watch him make adjustments on the fly, I mean, if somebody would have played his own defense against us the first 3 weeks of the season, he wouldn't have been able to play, because other than the fact he could make a shot, because we had – no time at all to teach him zone offense. We were just trying to get him up to speed with our regular offense and defense, and he did a remarkable job. He really did. But looking back, I think I can say that about a lot of guys. And we felt like at the end of the year we were finally starting to, we thought, get somewhat close to where we needed to be. But we still, again, there's going to be a lot of good that comes from it, because just with our conversations with our guys right now, that they know, and they're looking forward to getting started again next year.
Coach, when you look, kind of last question, talking about, this season, this past season, when you look back at, there were so many highs and lows, and you talked about them, and trying to get guys organized in the system that haven't been around, or maybe that didn't know that they would actually be playing. But a lot of Tennessee fans, when they talk about this year, and we've taken calls about this for the last month or so, they talk about going to Lexington and that performance from Fulkerson, but also, you know, the way Eves was playing and Bowden was playing on defense and how so many guys were hitting some clutch shots down the stretch. Well, that whole situation of going up there and battling back, what was that experience like as a head coach for you? I know you have great respect for John Calipari and what he's done, but you know, getting to feel that emotion in the locker room afterwards, is that something, the game that you'll look back on and maybe remember one of the most out of this past season?
Yeah, you know what? I'll go back. I'll go back a game before that. We had played. We played terrific here against Florida, and we remember we had a big lead. And for 25 minutes, I mean, we were cruising. And again, it goes back to our team. So many guys were in situations that they hadn't been in ever. And you know, I know everybody thinks you've got a 15-point lead or 18-point lead early in the game. The game's over. Well, it's never over, and that's what we've always tried to tell our guys. You know, when you lose a game by 12 points, that's four possessions. You know, that's a four-possession game, really, if you count making threes each time with the ball, and if otherwise, it's six possessions. And so what we did after that Florida game, we went in and I said, here's what we're going to learn from this game. I want you guys, as you continue to learn this game, to realize that when you're playing well for 25 minutes, the other team has got to do something different. There's not a coach in our league or any league, and coach anywhere, that's not going to say, okay, we got to do something. They might decide they're going to turn it, do something different on the defensive end, get aggressive. They might say to some guy, okay, I want you to put your heads down and just drive and get fouled as much as you can. So we have to learn, as we keep growing as a team, the game of basketball, that when somebody's up or down, they're going to make adjustments, then we have to adjust. So we talked about what they did to us, and then we showed where we had got lackadaisical, and we went through Folky, and twice we got him the ball, and he got fouled, and we're in the 1-on-1, and he didn't make the free throws. So now we go 0-for-4. They go down and hit two threes. It's 18-12, you know, real quick. And then I said, then we come back down, and then someone else got fouled. So we actually went through a period in that game, and so we explained that to him. Now we go to Kentucky, and we're down 17, 18 points. And I remember sitting right in front of the guys. I said, okay, guys, we were on the other end of this. Now, what are we going to do to change the flow of this game right now? They think the game is over. And just like our players thought when we were up 17, 18 at Georgia, they think it's over. There's a lot of time left. What are we going to do right now? And I said to them, here's what we're going to do on defense. You know, we're going to force them every time down the floor out of the lane, see if they can make some jump shots, and then we're going to get it, and we're going to run. We're going to get aggressive. We're going to get fouled. And it's not that you don't tell these guys that when the game's going on, but you know what? You could go back to the Kentucky game. All at once, they did just what we did. We come down, make a couple threes just like Florida did. They go down, miss a couple shots, turn the ball over twice, and then before you know it, you can feel that big momentum changing. And so I think going through what we did at Florida helped us there, but to watch our guys, and I will tell you this, with 3.5 minutes to go in that game, Jordan Bowden, and you mentioned it, came over to me and said, Coach, they had called timeout. He's walking straight to me, and he said, Coach, we're going to win this game. And when your players think like that, and you got, I mean, that's a wonderful feeling, but he didn't say it he just said it to me and me only. He just walked right up to me and patted me on the chest. He said, Coach, we're going to win this game. And they had that confidence. So it was special. It really was. And Folky, you think about what he did. It was special because the last part of the year, everybody was coming after him. You know, he gets pushed around and as much as anybody. But that's the one thing we talked to him about in the offseason. He's going to have to get a stronger base because referees think sometimes that he's not holding his ground. He's flopping a little bit. And I don't think he is a flopper. I've never thought that, you know. But It was one of those games we'll always remember.
Coach, are you able to talk about the grad transfer situation with the commitment last week?
No, not yet. We can't. Okay. We haven't been able to sign him, so I really can't talk about it.
Okay. All right. Yeah, don't want to get you in any NCAA hot water or anything, but kind of along those lines, the college basketball world is really – a buzz with the documentary that aired this week on HBO about the FBI investigation into college hoops. And I know you don't want to disparage any of your brethren in the coaching ranks, but it strikes me that if the rules are applied the way they're supposed to, you guys would have won back-to-back SEC championships last year. Do you feel confident that the NCAA is going to do the right thing and hold people accountable for where rules were clearly broken?
You know, I like to say I feel confident. I mean, when I watched that the other night, and obviously it was going to be shaded, tilted through the eyes of Christian Dawkins. We know that. And watching it, I was just shocked at how the FBI, I was shocked at their approach, how they thought they were going to do something, like they wanted to see coaches take money and hand it somewhere. Their approach, where they said they had the playbook, they didn't have the playbook. Believe me, they don't have the playbook, because what's been going on in college basketball, I could go back and talk about, it's been something every decade since probably 1940, some way, somehow. But, as a coach, you'd like to think that, and I will say this, I don't think there's any question the NCAA knows what has gone on in our sport forever. I really believe that. They know. The point is, they would say things like, okay, we can't wiretap, we can't do this, we can't do that. But I don't think you have to wiretap. I think some of those things that was said the other night are pretty tough. I mean, I think anybody would listen to that and understand that conversation. I think it gets back to universities, that, how do we want to be looked upon, how we want to do things. But to answer your question, am I confident that the NCAA is going to do the right thing? I think they will do everything they can with what information they have. I can only tell you this. The NCAA has a lot of money that they have to set aside for being ready to be sued. They probably get sued every day of the year, and they got money set aside for litigation or, legal fees and all that. But the only thing that bothered me when they came out was a couple months ago, or maybe, I don't know how long it's been now, where they said, we've got to slow down. We don't have enough people to cover all the 6 or 8 teams, whatever it is we need to look at. That's disappointing, because I think that, you let it goes on for year after year after year. Some of those teams can still benefit from some of the things they did, and now they're playing for another national championship or whatever it may be. And that's the disappointing part, that we can't get to a quick answer quicker. And I know everybody talks about due diligence, this and that, but how hard is it to get into it, and whatever it is that they need to get, can they get it? They can't. They can't. But that's where I think the frustration lies. And I will tell you this, too, where I think the frustration lies in the coaching business is that when our whole business gets criticized, if they think that's the way the whole business is, and it's not. It really isn't. I mean, there's a lot of coaches I could go down the line and tell you they were in the business for a long time. They didn't cheat. They haven't cheated, and they won't cheat. And that's the one thing that I've been doing this for over 40 years now, and we all get reputations some way, somehow, and most of it's based on, how you do things, go about your business, and handle matters, but there are, believe me, there are more coaches in the business that don't do what was portrayed the other night than what, they don't do it that way.
That's interesting, because that's the exact opposite, impression that they're trying to give. When you see Christian Dawkins sitting there saying, I don't think any coach that pays his players is a bad person. I think coaches that don't pay their players are bad people. How does that strike you?
Well, I believe there's rules in place. You got to play by the rules, whether you like it or not. You just said, I can sit here and say, technically, did we win a conference championship back to back? But by rule, nothing's been proven, so I can't say that we have. But when there's rules in place, and we don't always get what we want in life. You don't get what you want all the time. But do I think the NCAA's tried to work hard at taking care of players? I really do. Do I think a scholarship has a value? I really do. I've got people that have been on my staff who's married, and they're paying back $150,000 to $200,000 a year in student loans. with 6% interest. So you'll never convince me that scholarships don't mean something. And people, I think they're free for some reason. I think they think they're free, and they're not. And so that's where people have to raise money to do that. And also think that, you know, with the new cost of living, you know, the NCAA put in where players get, you know, roughly here, what, 5,900 bucks over the year, plus, you know, there's a needy student fund if that needs to be. Like when Devontae Gaines' grandfather passed away, we were able to fly him home and get him back. And so I know the NCAA is trying to work. And here's what I'm going to tell you what's going to be interesting right now. When you talk about what's going on right now, everybody thinks the NCAA has all this money. And if they have all this money, we're going to find out when we come out of this, if they have it, how they're going to help these schools that are going to have to drop some sports because they're not going to be able to finance what's happening after losing the NCAA money. You will see some people with this crisis have to do that. And I really believe this. If the NCAA has the kind of money that everybody thinks they have, they would have to step up and give more money to universities so they don't have to drop sports. But I don't think they can. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be interesting because I will tell you, when we come out of this, there are going to be universities, and it'll be mostly those at the mid-level, lower level, that don't have the little, you know, the nest egg to fall back on, and they counted heavily on NCAA tournament, their payouts from that, and are simply going to have to look and say, we've got to cut costs here some way because they're letting spring athletes come back, which I don't know how many of those some of those athletes will do that because some have already had plans to go on to grad school or whatever. But there's going to be some more fallout from this than we think at the collegiate level.
Coach Barnes, I'll end it on this, and I sure appreciate you joining us. What's daily life been like for you? Like, I know that you were cooking some corn dogs recently and trying to learn how to do that, and I'm sure the wife is loving having you around 24 hours a day. So what's it been like in the Barnes household?
Well, I don't know if that last statement's true. I don't know if she – I think right now, you know, if she ever thought about me retiring, I think now she would tell you, you need to keep working. You know, you need to stay busy. But corn dogs, I do love corn dogs. And the only thing that I'm going to make are going to be things that I really enjoy eating. And one day I'd gotten up and I said, you know, I'm going to try this. And she got – well, she was a great – you know, I made a mess in her kitchen. And I had flour all over the place. I mean, I didn't know that stuff could get so messy, but it was everywhere. But you know what I do what I always do. You know, I get up early in the morning and try to spend time in the Word. And then I would normally get out the door. I'm walking more now than I've ever. I've been averaging probably 10 miles a day trying to get myself back in better shape. But I miss doing what I do. And one thing here, we're seriously taking what everybody's supposed to do. We're going to do it, and you know, we're involved in the community here, and we really want to help those that need help. And we do reach out to people that we know that are really out there trying to help the people that need help. And any way we can help, we're going to help them because I love Knoxville. And I know there's people that I feel for. A lot of people I feel for, the young people who are having to work their way through the university, through colleges, and you know, they have apartments, rent they have to pay, and you know, they've been laid off from the work. And I really feel for those people that are in assisted living where they're somewhat, you know, quarantined a little bit, but now, you know, those people probably cannot leave the room. And it's really, when you think about it, this is where we got to step out and do it the right way, do it where we don't put anybody in harm's way, but to help people that really need to help. Because I do think this, we haven't reached the peak of this right now. And for those people that need help, I want to help them. And if I ever can, I'm going to do that. That's why I want to stay hunkered down here in Knoxville. And if I get called on, I just want to be able to help somebody.
You're here. Coach, we appreciate your time so much. Thanks for jumping on. I know it's probably killing you not to be in the gym with your kids working on player development, but we appreciate you sharing some time with us this afternoon.
Well, I appreciate it. I will tell you this. I do miss the gym a lot, and last week I got so bored a little bit. I had to go over and I started working on my game again, and I tell you, I got a long way to go.
Get some shots up.
Yeah, I got on the gun and started shooting the shots, and the next day my right arm was so sore from, you know, shooting the last one. I'm like, well, I got a long way to go to get back.
We saw you working on those free throws recently in some videos that were put out, so you might have some work to do.
Yeah, I got some work to do.
We were worried when the bench got a little short there at one point, whether you guys had, I don't know if Kim English has any eligibility or somebody, but you were almost in dire straits there.
Well, we would have gone with Kim. There's no doubt. He would have been the guy that would have had to step up, and to be quite honest with you, he would have helped us.
Very good. Well, Coach, appreciate it again. We'll let you get on out of here. Thanks for jumping on with us.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Rick Barnes making his presence felt. And I guess my big takeaway there, Trey, I thought I was doing good with the walking. Coach Barnes, 10 miles a day.
Yeah, dude. I'm slacking, dude. I'm about to hang up right now and just go start walking. And I'll just call y'all tomorrow because I'm slacking big time.
How about that? All right. We are overdue for a break. Quick timeout. We have a lot to unpack there, obviously. Stay tuned. The drive continues. More Fan Run Radio coming up. Fan Run Radio, the drive continues. Russell Bear, Trey back with you. Some pretty good stuff there with Coach Barnes, man. That was fantastic. Bear, I know you were listening closely, taking notes, no doubt. Coach Barnes, your reaction.
He knows that he should be a two-time SEC champion. So
I love how
I'll take away from it.
I was thinking he might try and duck, dodge, and dive on that one, but he tackled it head on, and pretty much everything we've been saying is like, look, you know, life's not fair, and yeah, we should have two back-to-back SEC championships. We should have won last year. LSU won it, clearly playing at least two ineligible players. All those wins should be vacated. And Tennessee and Kentucky tied behind them. And obviously, we split the regular season series. So that should be a shared SEC championship. We should have back-to-back SEC championships. And Trey, help me out here. Basically, he said he – what did he say? Was he confident? He didn't sound terribly confident that the NCAA would do what's right, or did he?
No, he didn't sound confident at all. He was pretty much saying that, look, he said the NCAA has had that information before, and they didn't need any. Here's what stood out to me. He said the NCAA, they don't need wiretaps. Like, they know what's going on. They've known what's going on in college basketball for a very long time. And that stood out to me. When he said they don't need any wiretaps, they know what's going on, that's what stood out to me. And he also said this quote as well, which I found interesting. There are more coaches in the business that don't do what was portrayed the other night than there are that do.
Yeah.
That's a hard statement.
Yeah, and, you know, if you watch that documentary, you come away thinking, golly, you know, 90% of college basketball coaches are corrupt. Maybe that number's a little high, but what is the number? I'm just speculating here. Is it 50-50? I think we would all be stunned. I think we all feel like Rick Barnes is doing it as cleanly as it can be done at that level right now. But I go back to what I said yesterday. And if after, you know, we sometimes joke about is like, oh, you can't prove what happened behind closed doors. You need a videotape of it, right? Well, we have a videotape. We have a videotape in this case. We have audio tapes. We know exactly what happened, exactly what transpired. If the NCAA can't make these charges stick, if they can't throw the book at LSU, throw the book at Arizona, and maybe a couple of other schools as well, then they might as well go ahead and tear it down and start all over in terms of any sort of college athletics enforcement, because if they can't properly adjudicate this scenario, then they can't properly adjudicate anything, because it'll never be this cut and dry again.
No. And, well, what stood out to me as well is when he said, the FBI thought they had the playbook, but I promise you they don't.
He said,
in my 40 years, everybody builds up a reputation in this business. And he said it's not fair to criticize all college basketball and think everybody's doing that when they're not. He laid it out there, man. He did. He said, look, pretty much I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, hey, this is what's going on. The people that are doing this should be in trouble for it, but he doesn't think the NCAA is going to do a damn thing about it. And I agree with him.
Wow.
I mean, didn't that stand out to you? Didn't that stand out to you when he said that? Like the thing, when the FBI got up there that day in the Southern District of New York and said, we have your playbook.
Yeah.
But in the end, they really didn't. And Rick Barnes, like he just said, they don't have the playbook. They don't know what they're talking about.
Well, it would have been so interesting if they had been able to push just a little bit further, if they had been just a little bit more on their game as far as the way that investigation unfolded. They were really close to, getting money changing hands as far as, their money, the FBI's money going into the coach's hands. And they could have had that. And, heck, we could have had, I don't know that the coaches would have gone to prison. I mean, some of those other guys got off, but they would have had to stand up there and stand trial, and they would have been convicted felons, just like, Merle Code and Jim Gatto and Christian Dawkins. And it would have been really interesting if they had just been able to complete the investigation the way they sought to when they started out. But obviously they did it, and now we'll see what the NCAA can get done.
I'd like your interpretation, Tanner and Bears. When he said what he said, when you were talking about SEC championships in that matter, and I know Bear hit on a second ago, but kind of further clarification, y'all took that as, Tennessee should have been two-time champs, right? Because that's how I took it. Like, if the NCAA would have done their job, those players wouldn't have been allowed to be involved.
And the thing to me that's striking, Bear, is if this had happened 30 years ago, right? I mean, they basically ended Jerry Tarkanian 30 years ago. If the climate were the same now as it was then there's no doubt in my mind that when they suspended Will Wade in the middle of the season, they would have, the smart kid would have been ruled ineligible. He would have played again in the SEC, and he's good enough to go play in the pros. He'll be fine. Will Wade would have been done. Like, he would never coach again at the collegiate level. Sean Miller would have been done. But Will Wade would have been done. Those wins would have been vacated, and Tennessee and Kentucky would have shared that championship. And, man, we know after everything this football program and basketball program have been through the last 10-plus years now, we know how scarce championships are, how valuable, how precious they are. We celebrated that SEC basketball championship 2 years ago like it was the precious gift that it was. And we were robbed of a second one. And that'll piss me off till the day I die. I'm not going to, it's water under the bridge now, I guess. there's not much they could do to make it right, but doesn't mean I'm not Maynardville mad about it.
No, I'm not exactly happy about it. I mean, it's just it's a joke. They had more. They've got more on Will Wade and Sean Miller than they ever had on Buck Pearl. But now we've got to sit and watch him go to a Final Four at freaking Auburn, of all places.
Hell, Barry.
How'd they suck down there?
They've got more on Sean Miller and Will Wade than they had on Donnie Tindall. And they had a lot on Donnie Tindall. And he's a two-time loser or whatever. Like, I get it. But good grief. I mean, we got drilled. Two of our guys had to go away. And Donnie Tindall's going to have to go away probably forever. And, you know, LSU, the guy gets caught, as you say, more on him than anybody else. And not only do they not lose the championship, they get to keep the coach.
I mean, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's maddening. You can't let yourself think about it, man.
Yeah, I guess you're right. We got a stay-at-home order. Stay with us. The shocking conclusion of the drive coming up. Speak now, forever hold your peace. 865-546-8200, your number to get on the show this afternoon. 546-8200. We'll be back to wrap things up right after this. The drive continues, wrapping up this afternoon here on the show. Rick Barnes says he's walking 10 miles a day. Listen, man, I'm not going to call the man a liar. That's a lot of walking. Like if you're running, you're jogging, like it might go through, but 10 miles a day, that's going to, like, how long it take you to walk a mile? If you're moving, walking at a brisk pace, how long it take you to walk a mile? 15, 20 minutes?
No, 12 to 15. You're walking at brisk pace.
All right. Well, let's take your low estimate. 12 minutes walking. 12. I think that'd be more along the lines of
4 miles an hour is what they refer to as a brisk walking pace. Russell,
is what? All right. So that would be 120 minutes. That'd be a 2 hour walk. If he's walking a mile every 12 minutes.
He's probably doing it on a treadmill, I guess. Wouldn't you think?
I guess it could be done. He said he made it sound like he was getting out and walking outside. Maybe just around the neighborhood, something like that. Well, I saw where a gentleman
get out of
England,
the house.
Yeah. I saw where a gentleman in England, James Campbell, a former professional javelin thrower, I didn't even know that was a profession, spent his 32nd birthday yesterday doing 20-foot shuttles from one end of his small backyard to the other after promising to run a marathon in his backyard if a Twitter message received 10,000 retweets. I don't know if you guys saw this. It did well over 10,000 retweets, and so he did it. And you know how densely populated England is. This guy had like a small backyard, 20 feet long, and he just ran around that for an entire marathon. He calculated he would traverse his yard 7,000 times to reach the 26 miles, and there's video of him doing it. He did it today.
Wow.
How about that? 7,000 laps around your, we'll say, 400 square foot backyard. That, in addition to, you know, just running a marathon, which seems damn near impossible and difficult, that just seems like mind-numbingly monotonous and boring. But congratulations to him. He got in shape. He did it. Trey, you got some traking news to finish us off?
Yeah, I do, guys, and this comes out of the Big 12, and take it as you will. According to an email from interim Oklahoma president Joseph Haraz, OU's Norman campus classes will move online for the summer session due to coronavirus concerns. Here's the key part, gentlemen. and in-person events on all three campuses will be suspended through at least July 31st. Lincoln Riley, 2 days ago, hypothetically, if you're able to open up campuses on June 1st and start having guys and all that, then I doubt they change much. If you're not able to do that, then there's going to be a lot of things that are going to have to be looked at. Oklahoma shutting down till July 31st at least.
Well, here's the thing, man. I understand that the administrators and the conferences and the college have to plan, and it's impossible to plan because we don't know how the landscape is going to change week to week, let alone from month to month. But, you know, they have to have plans. They have to have contingency plans and contingency plans for their contingency plans. I get that. But to me, guys, I don't know how much worth it, if it's really worth worrying about that much because of the element of the unknown. I just don't know. But I get what you're saying, Trey. Like if there's no students on campus during the month of July, which is second session summer school, that's when players are working out. Like you're gonna have to have kids on campus by August so that you can play football. And I saw one administrator or an athletics director, somebody saying, you know, it really doesn't make sense to have college sports going on if college isn't going on. And I agree with that, man. As much as I want to say see football, it is college football. And it seems pretty silly to have college football without college. And college, to me, isn't really just 20,000 students taking online classes. It's 20,000 students living on a campus and everything that goes along with that. So we'll see.
They also extended the national letter of intent. This is just coming out. All Division I and Division II sports will be in a signing period from April 15th through August 1st of 2020, including Division I basketball and football. So athletes now get an extra 2 months. So that's some good news.
Yeah. Rick Barnes,
hey, that was
also
a hell of an interview with Barnes today, guys.
Yeah, it was very good. We also asked him about, or I tried to ask him about EJ Anasicki, and evidently, I guess he is not officially signed or what. I don't know. They don't sign, right? I mean, he's committed, but I guess they can't talk about him until he signs scholarship papers and shows up on campus. So that's not
a
done
deal.
Try, though. Do what?
Good try. You kept your bat on your shoulder when it came to in-state recruiting, didn't you, big boy? You left that pitcher. You didn't take a swing at it.
I forgot.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I bet you
I'm
did.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, we had him on for 20 minutes. I'm not going
to – I figured you could have worked it in there at some point. Because of the way the phone was set up, I couldn't ask him. But no. One damn question I wanted to answer. You really let me down today, Smith.
I'm sorry, Bear. How can I make it up to you?
I don't know. I'll figure something out. You got an N95 mask laying around?
Thank you, Trey.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Tanner.
Thank you, Bear. Tanner Carson, outstanding work by you, sir, back in the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios. Don't forget, Three and Out begins promptly at 7 a.m. tomorrow. Then you got the Blitz from 10 to noon. Talk sports with John and Cody from noon to 3. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? We'll do it again tomorrow. 3 to 6, right here on Fan Run Radio. Have a great night.